It's Thursday, the 4th of September, and here from the Biz News team is your Biz News briefing. Well, let's get straight into it. The Economist, the world's most influential weekly publication, has this week allocated its China podcast to relationships between China and South Africa. You can get that full podcast if you're a subscriber to The Economist, but we're going to give you a little taste where The Economist geopolitics editor David Rennie talks to the publication's chief Africa correspondent, John McDermott.
Xi Jinping told the ministers assembled in Changsha that China is going to essentially have zero tariffs, tax-free entry for most imports from Africa. And that's a big deal. And it's a pretty stark contrast. 30% tariffs for South Africa from Trump's administration and zero tariffs on most of South Africa's exports to China. How much does that offer a genuine sort of silver bullet economically, John? Does that basically mean that South Africa can tell the Americans to get knotted because it's got China as a giant market and it doesn't need those American markets?
It's a great question. And remember, it's coming at a time when it looks like the African Growth and Opportunity Act, often known as AGOA, introduced by Bill Clinton in the 2000s, is set to expire. And that essentially did what the Chinese are promising to do now, which was to provide African exporters duty-free access to the American market. And now the Trump administration is not only set to see that expire in September, it's adding tariffs on top of that. At the same time, I think in an ideal world, South African exporters, like other African exporters, would want both, and they need both, because South Africa needs growth. And simply swapping one for the other doesn't make it a net positive situation. It's also not practically easy to do.
Yeah.
I don't know if you tried some while you were here, David, but the oranges here are fabulous this time of year.
Cape fruit. It's tasty.
Cape fruit. My kids were gorging themselves on blood oranges the other week at a blood orange festival. And if you go to Whole Foods in the United States right now, you will still be able to buy some oranges from South Africa that were shipped before tariffs were imposed. But now they will be whacked with 30% duties, which can be the difference between making a profit or not if you're a citrus farmer. And they said, OK, well, we are going to try and pivot to the Asian market. But it's not easy because Chinese like different types of oranges and they have different standards and so on and so forth. So if I drive a few minutes from my house to see Cape Town Port, you might be able to find crate loads of oranges, not really knowing where their destination is right now, because the American market seems to be closed off and it's too early for them to take advantage of the Chinese market.
Yeah, and Trump Tower listeners may remember that when I was still based in China, I visited places like Jiangxi, where they have some very tasty oranges. They don't actually need a ton of oranges from South Africa. So yeah, look, you're right. They can't just replace one and say that American and Western markets are completely unimportant. And that has got to be the challenge South Africa is facing right now. The US does look increasingly unreliable as a trade partner, as a political partner. But the obvious alternative, China, brings its own challenges too.
A wonderful podcast, half an hour focused on whether China is the solution for South Africa. Love that little bit where David says, well, can we tell them just to get knotted? Which in South African terms is get stuffed. On to the next story now, and that is the surprises in the by-elections yesterday here at home. Chris Dane spoke to the elections specialist, Wayne Sussman.
Before we go to those results and get you to analyze them for us, let's go to Zeerust, where gunmen have taken control of a municipal council. What is the backstory there?
Thank you very much, Chris. And I always like to take two steps back. I want to remind the viewers and the listeners that the Ramotshere Moiloa municipality is in Zeerust. It's part of the same district where the Ditsebotla municipality in Lichtenburg is, which was considered the most dysfunctional municipality in South Africa. So we're now seeing another municipality close by in total chaos and almost total inability to to get things done and make decisions here. So we have this strange scenario, which is not unique in South African politics. We know of other examples where there are two seeming mayors of the municipality. There is Dinah Pitso, who was the mayor up until a few months ago and is still seen as the mayor by the ANC in the Northwest leadership. And then there's Mr. Itumeleng Morabi, who has the backing of many in the ANC caucus and some other political parties. And essentially, Mr. Morabi was elected by the mayor a few weeks ago, a few months ago. But this process was criticized heavily by Dinah Pitso, the former mayor, and by the ANC in the Northwest. So much so that there hasn't been a resolution to this matter. There was a meeting in Parliament where they tried to determine how to deal with this going forward. And also this crazy scenario of the rival factions having gunmen in the municipality, gunmen near a council chamber, near the engine of this municipality, is greatly concerning, not just for our democracy, but also for service delivery in South Africa. Armed violence has no place in our council chambers. Violence has no place in a place where service delivery is supposed to be strategized, where services are supposed to be planned. So this is concerning. So it seems the key thing is for Dinah Pitso, the hapless Dinah Pitso, the person who has voted out, is she has the backing of the ANC Northwest leadership. And I think this might help her remain in control. But also, just to take another step back, I spoke at the beginning, just to give the context, that this isn't so far from Lichtenburg or Ditsebotla municipality. The Northwest for the ANC is one of the most stable electoral provinces. I was actually going through the numbers just before I came here. Even though the ANC does better in the Eastern Cape than it does in the Northwest, when you look at its fall in support, the fall in support in the Northwest in 2024 was more subdued than it was in the Eastern Cape, i.e. the ANC lost more support in the Eastern Cape than it did in the Northwest. And it is now crucial for the ANC, first of all, to bring back order to this Ramoshere Moloa municipality, and also get its house in order across the rest of the Northwest, because otherwise it's going to be a difficult election in a critical province for the ANC next year.
That full podcast is, interview is on BizNews TV and on BizNews Radio, which you will find on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Well, Neil Froneman has been a giant in South African mining. He had his official farewell party last night, and the incoming chief executive, CEO designate, Richard Stewart, made a most interesting contribution to proceedings when he asked those in attendance to thank Neil for what he has done for Sibanye-Stillwater over the years, and I guess for mining generally in South Africa. Let's have a listen.
Neil, I'm writing to express my sincere gratitude for your unwavering support and leadership over the past 6 years. Since our first meeting with the widows of the Marikana massacre, you have honored your promises to provide support, including the donation of homes and ensuring the education of our children. While the past cannot be changed, your actions have shown a deep sense of responsibility and have brought much-needed recognition to the pain and loss that we have endured. Your commitment to restoring our pride and providing assistance has made a significant difference in my family's life. Thank you for your compassion, for powerful leadership in supporting the families. You have truly lived Sibanye-Stillwater's values practically, and I wish you all the best in your retirement.
Now, isn't that something? The highlight, you would think, of the retirement proceedings is that letter from a widow of one of those who died in the Marikana tragedy. And Froneman was not involved at all at that time. His company, Sibanye-Stillwater, bought the business that owned the Marikana mine and as a consequence picked up the liability, if you like, for looking after the widows and orphans of those mine workers who died there. I got a feeling that if it was me and that was the only thing that somebody said on my retirement, I'd leave a very, very happy man. Sure he does. Well, on to Sim Tshabalala now. The Standard Bank chief executive expects a difficult G20 summit. Here he is talking to Bloomberg.
Sim, thank you so much for being here with me. Tom was just talking about just how significant this G20 summit potentially could be if we do see a communique actually coming later this year. We're seeing a number of geopolitical tensions, though, getting in the way of a number of financial institutions. As Africa's biggest bank, talk about how you're navigating that right now.
Jennifer, the world is complicated. It's going through a very turbulent time now. We've not seen the levels of volatility for decades. But, you know, if you go back to thousands of years of economic history, you have upswings, you have downswings, you've got turbulence, and you go back to equilibrium after all of these periods of turbulence. Our institution analyzes the environment, we analyze the geopolitics, the geoeconomics, right. We position our institution accordingly, and we manage for the future, looking forward over 10, 20 or 30 years.
Does this period, though, of instability potentially affect what we ultimately see from the leader summit and the communique coming later this year?
It does. It makes it very, very difficult. You've got the United States, which is following a different path to what has traditionally been. We're going through a period of deglobalization from the perspective of the United States. But we believe that the United States is always going to remain inextricably intertwined with global issues and global events. We're respectfully making recommendations that we hope they will take on, because the United States is going to be following South Africa. This is a long-term game, Jennifer, and you respectfully make your point, you argue for it, you give data in support thereof, and we're hoping that the authorities will follow.
One of those proposals is overhauling financial architecture, and in particular Basel reform. Talk about what you expect could actually be achieved, especially if we talk about the U.S. and taking over the G20 presidency next year.
Well, there are two different types of things happening at the same time. The one is the U.S. is no longer participating in Basel IV, for example. The EU has put the pen down. The United Kingdom has also put the pen down, subject to what will happen with the US. Everybody wants to be competitive. Other parts of the world have implemented Basel. We, as South Africa, have implemented Basel IV. So that's the one set of issues. The second one is we would like changes to the regulations such that we hold less capital for infrastructure projects on the African continent and globally. That's the second macroprudential type of changes we would be recommending.
What do you think that could actually open up then for the global south?
It could open up for Africa. We need $170 billion per annum on infrastructure. We can only raise $85 billion. Making those changes would release a vast amount of money, of capital, allowing us to write more projects to close that gap of $85 billion. That's just one example.
And Sim, this week we were focusing on the SEO summit that was happening and some of the reforms for policy and development policy in particular. Will we see that from the task force that you're chairing as well? Similar recommendations?
Our recommendations are about reducing the cost of capital for the global south and emerging markets, making it easier to move goods between countries on the African continent and in emerging markets, making it easier to build projects that are transformational, whether it be bridges, ports, data centers. And all our recommendations are calculated to make it easier to finance these transformational projects.
Right. So similar to what we saw earlier this week, potentially?
Similar, but different, and focus very much on the African continent and emerging markets.
There's a task team called the B20, which does connections between the G20, which is the governments, and the business sectors. And Sim heads up the infrastructure and finance task force on the B20. It's interesting to see the innovation that's being brought in and what, in fact, could happen with just a little bit of give on one side or the other.
This is where the unthinkable happened. They just came here and took his car.
No.
I sold it to them. What's this?
It's crime scene tape. Did they pay you at least?
Within 15 minutes, money was in my account.
Were you happy with the number they brought you?
I got almost the same price as what I paid for the car. Everything was easy, everything was painless.
Well, there you have it, South Africa. With We Buy Cars, you won't come short. How tall are you really?
1.93.
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Well, those who follow the model portfolios that we put together here for BizNews Premium would have been delighted when they looked this morning at the values and saw that the company that we doubled up on in the last webinar has actually jumped 9%. Also, another constituent of the portfolio was up 3%. That's in the United States on Wall Street. And I'm talking here about Alphabet, which is the holding company of Google and Apple Inc. There's a big story behind all of this. Lots of excitement for the shareholders in those companies. And this morning, our partners at the Financial Times in the FT News briefing had a look at what is going on. Mark Filippino, who's the host, spoke to John Foley. And John is the guy who heads the Lex column. And the Lex column is probably the most respected investment guideline publication in the world.
Shares of Google's parent company Alphabet surged yesterday. That's in large part because of a court decision on Tuesday that said Google doesn't have to sell off its Chrome browser. At play in the case was whether Google has become too dominant as a search tool. But the judge ruled that the answer is no, thanks to recent advancements in artificial intelligence. John Foley is the head of the FT's Lex column. He joins me now to break this all down. Good to have you. So, John, catch us up on this big court decision. How big of a win is it for the company?
So I think the market tells you that this is a pretty big win. Google's shares, or Alphabet, the parent company of Google's shares, were up by the equivalent of $220-something billion on Wednesday. So that's showing that there is an enormous sense of relief. This shows you that there was an overhang on the shares because of concerns that this case would end with the judge saying that Google basically had to break itself up into pieces. That hasn't happened, and that's a big win. Now, it's worth saying that this case is not over yet because Google may appeal, but at the moment, Google has definitely escaped the worst.
Got it. So it might just be temporary relief for investors. But the thing I want to focus on, John, is my understanding is that artificial intelligence plays a pretty big role in this decision. How does AI fit into this story exactly?
One of the things that the judge, Amit Mehta, said in this decision is that AI was not a factor at the beginning of this trial, which started, this process started back in 2023. By the end of it, everyone was talking about generative AI. Witnesses were saying this market is changing dramatically because of the arrival of competitors like ChatGPT. The judge himself is saying that potentially AI will reshape the competitive landscape without Google having to break itself up into pieces. And that's one of the reasons why he stopped short of, for example, asking for the Chrome browser to be detached or explicitly banning Google from making payments that put its apps in default settings on smartphones.
John, tell me more about all of this. What does AI have to do with it?
So the big thing that's changed is really ChatGPT is amassing users extremely quickly. It now has something like 700 million weekly users. And it's not the same as a search engine, but it is increasingly the place where people go to retrieve information in the way they would have done from a search engine. Google is obviously like trying to fight back. Google is introducing AI, generative AI, into its own searches. Sometimes when you ask a question, that kind of narrates the answer to you rather than just showing you links. But ChatGPT is changing the way that people use the internet. And Google is certainly acting as if there is a risk that ChatGPT could also change search.
Getting back to the outcome of the case, what exactly is Google allowed to do now? And what are they not allowed to do? I mean, what are the next steps for the company?
So the big thing that isn't happening is that they don't have to sell Chrome, their browser. This is really important because Chrome, which defaults to Google search, makes up about 20% of all US internet search. They also don't have to stop making deals with smartphone makers like Apple to get their apps put on its phones in a default setting. There are limits to what it can now do, and there are specifically limits being put in place to try and ensure that Google can't extend its current monopoly in search into new AI-based products like assistants and so on.
Oh, interesting insights there on, our favorite share of the moment, Alphabet. At BizNews, we are always looking for innovations and new ways to bring you information that can empower you. And increasingly now, we are talking to analysts in the financial area who are able to unpack what is happening in particular sectors. There is a very popular weekly, well, it's called the Mining Web Weekly discussion with Peter Major. That's on a Wednesday. And now we have, joining that rank of our analysts, the guru in financial services, and his name is Kuki Koyman from Denker Capital. Our conversation today is up on BizNews TV, and if you're in the banking sector or indeed anywhere in financial services, you'll find it riveting. Kuki talks about the moves at the executive level where you had a group, the CEO of Nedbank was appointed from Absa. He brought a whole bunch of people across from Absa into Nedbank. And so Absa then went and poached the deputy CEO at Standard Bank, and he's brought a whole bunch of Standard Bank people across into Absa. And Kuki doesn't think it's a big problem for Standard Bank. They got a deep bench, but it is interesting to see how the musical chairs are occurring here in South Africa in a way that they've been and never happened in the past. But in this clip that we're taking from the conversation with Kuki in a little area that we call in the BizNews briefing, the Market Analyst's Corner, he talks about the likelihood or not of interest rates falling in South Africa now that they look like they're going to come down in the US, but stay up in the EU.
Lower interest rates. I think where our growth rate is, we certainly should be lowering interest rates because there's no growth at the moment. And like in Brazil, where they've got the same problem, and Lissette will be saying to the government, it's your policies that are keeping growth rate low and inflation high. You know, just what's happened with NERSA and Eskom. It's going to be inflationary. The higher electricity cost feeds through to everything, keeps inflation high. So it doesn't help he lowers interest rates when he doesn't have support, fiscal support from government that makes growth and lower inflation. So yeah, his mandate is to ensure the stability of the currency, which is very important, and to keep inflation, a low inflation environment. So the tussle with him and Treasury at the moment is the Reserve Bank wants the inflation target that they set even lower. And inflation is generally, you need some inflation for growth, but generally it's good for the wealthy because the wealthy have assets. You've got a house, you've got shares. Inflationary pressures normally push up the prices of that. It's the poor that suffer under inflation because their wages always rise slow, and then the cost of transport, the cost of food. And so he's really actually, it's a policy trying to help the poor. And so it's like a child, you punish him because it's good for him, but he's keeping interest rates high to get inflation down. And that's the pressure. And that's really what Jay Powell is doing in the US as well, making sure that the inflationary pressures have abated, because the worst thing you want to do as a central bank governor is to lower interest rates while inflationary pressures haven't abated, and then inflation picks up and you've got to hike interest rates again, and then you get a lot of volatility and uncertainty.
Well, I'm very pleased that it wasn't our doorbell that was going, because our Jack Russell has that as a signal to bark away at the top of his voice. Well, closing off for today and for this week is a video that's gone viral. You may have seen it. It's a little bit like, if you recall, the Coldplay concert where a illicit affair was exposed between a chief executive and his HR director. Well, this one doesn't seem to be getting it any better for the Polish businessman who snatched away a signed cap from a little boy.
Like, there's a little boy, literally, this player takes off the hat, gives it to that kid. Nope.
Like, snatches.
Snatches.
Doesn't
it.
Even just say, like, okay, can I see or something? Snatches. And then the kid's trying to get it back and still can't get it
can
back.
Can you also, he doesn't even make eye contact with that little boy because he knew what he did was wrong. I took it. Yes, I did it quickly. But as I've always said, life is first come, first serve. I understand that some people might not like it, but please, let's not make a global scandal out of the hat. It's just a hat. If you were faster, you would have had it. Thankfully, the young fan was able to meet the tennis star and give an assigned hat that he deserved. There's that video right there. This has went viral. I am so angry that that Polish CEO said, basically, you snooze, you lose to this kid.
No, Peter, that's not the way we do things. Well, good luck to the Booker over the weekend. What a titanic struggle that promises to be. And maybe the Eden Park hoodoo can be broken. We'll be back again with you on Monday. Until then, from the Biz News team, cheerio.